Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you're tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Yo. I'm back like the crack from 86. Real rap terrorist. Got you on sights, nigga, I never miss. I'm here to flow for the masses. Bring hip-hop back to where you ungrateful bastards. The boom to the biz at. Fuck that shit been at. Dust off the tech. Polish off the mizac. Nobody can save you. Get ready for the drama now. No premiere round to tell me, Poe, calm it down.
What up, Primo?
I'll chop off your fucking head. Queensbridge regulator. Heard what I fucking said? I used to creep through the nightlight, knocks in the dark, getting off white, right. Heard niggas talk about, poet ain't nice, right? You versus me, like a gun in a knife fight. Niggas been hating on me since day one. I can't kill him, cause a father should never hurt his son. So I just do me, fall back, make bangers. My pedigree killed more kids than coat hangers. Niggas don't want this problem, it's automatic. One wave of the hand, make them disappear like magic. It's tragic, the way I rip, ravage the beat. The state of the game brings out the sadness. Nigga, it's war.
Y'all niggas who all of y'all niggas who hand. I'm going screwball.
On some warrior shit, taking all of this shit, involved all in the mix. I got Queens, Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan, Staten, Long Island, upstate, Wowland, Connecticut, predicates running around. Boston, get it in, like that movie The Town. My Baltimore niggas throw it up 12 o'clock. Jersey and Philly, they popping them heat rocks. From Northwick to BA to ATL. Detroit and Chi-Town, niggas raising hell. I got more bars than Rikers, my strike is deadly. Fuck these new niggas, I listen to check out my melody. I do this for my niggas that gave the game up. For my niggas that's prayed up, 6 feet laid up. And you think I'm gonna lead a game to you lame fucks. Looking like a bitch and everything you say sucks. Not on my watch, not on my block. Fuck wrong with you, don't ever try to play me, yo. Fuck what I tell and if they play me on the radio. Still a barbarian, beating beats to death. In the dust, that's where y'all motherfuckers getting left. It's war
with y'all niggas who all of y'all niggas who hand. I'm going screwball.
Bridge, we here forever.
Yeah. What it is. What it do. It's your man, King Eric, the media assassin. You are now tuned in to Off the Cuff Radio, episode 526. That track we just played right there was for my man, Black Poet, I Declare War. Simon Phoenix is out now in digital copies, physical copies, you name it. So go ahead and get that. So anyways, welcome to the show. We got a special guest on the line tonight, and this show is sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, Cocaine Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cot Pickers, Jesse Boutique. Got my man T-Max with the facts in the building. What's good?
What it do? What it do, y'all? So another wondrous Wednesday of Off the Cuff Radio. I'm your co-host, T-Max. Of course, your head pilot is King Eric. Before we get on the air tonight, the situation that happened.
I think you break it up a little bit. Hold on one second.
I'm back.
I
wanted to say first and foremost for what happened with the shooting at Walmart, yesterday in Chesapeake, Virginia, my hometown. Our thoughts and prayers with the victims. It's serious out there. Stay prayed up. Be careful out there. And just protect yourself at all times. You know what that is.
Absolutely.
And we just got to look out. So having said all that, King, let everybody know about who we got on air tonight, man.
Man, let me tell you, man, this is a special show right here. For number one, this is the first time we actually had an MMA fighter on the show. We've had wrestlers,
yep.
We had rappers, we have producers, movie directors, activists, but this is the first ever MMA fighter that we had. And this guy here, man, good friend of mine, he dedicated, he claims and bang, he go hard on whatever, and whenever fight time comes, you best believe we support him, man, 110 toes down. So, welcome to him to Off the Cuff Radio, true friend of mine, straight warrior at heart. Let's all welcome Too Strong Taylor, the Off the Cuff Radio, man. What's good, my man?
Yeah. What's good, brother? I appreciate you letting me get on the show, man. It's a dope opportunity. I'm super excited, man. But I'm here, man. I appreciate you.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Man. And
man, yeah.
Go ahead, T-Man.
No, just, man, look. Like King said, in a long, distinguished, and illustrious history of Off the Cuff Radio, you are another welcome and wonderful chapter to our championship banners of great guests. Obviously, your craft is well-respected and well-honed. And we're just excited to have you on the show tonight, man. It's great to meet you and for you to tell us your journey from how you started and from how some people think this thing is easy just watching it. How much training, discipline, dedication, desire, and a little bit of what the shit you have to be in order to do this. So we're ready for all
of
this.
Man.
Story,
oh, yeah.
Man. Thank you
man.
For being with us.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate y'all, giving the real, synopsis of what it takes to be an MMA fighter, period. And not just being an MMA fighter, but actually being a good one. It takes a lot, there's different aspects to the game. There's different things that you have to think about that's different, And I'm an athlete, but, I don't get to play this. Like other sports, you play basketball, you play football. You can't play fighting, At the end of the day, it's
right.
Risk our health, our mental, and, all for the love of the game, I feel like the best way to describe me is I'm a modern-day gladiator,
Absolutely.
So, yeah, man, I appreciate you guys letting me be on the show, and I'm here for the fun time.
Definitely.
Yeah, man, because
so
the reason why we wanted to bring you on we wanted to bring you on, man, not to only tell your journey, but to let people know that this ain't no Rocky movie, man. That shit is fantasy, man. This is a real dedication.
Hell yeah.
Hard
nah.
work. Mental preparation, all this stuff, man. It plays a chord.
Yeah, that's 100% truth. I mean, it's everything from what you eat to what you put in, like, you know, your mind. Like, it's not just what you put in terms of food, but what you put in your soul, you know, what you put in your mind and how you go about your day, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I got that from my coach, and that quote helped me kind of like guide not just my career in fighting, but anything that I do outside, because how you do anything is how you do everything, you know. And so for me, it's a journey, you know. There isn't any point to where I want to just say, this is the beginning, and now this is the end, and that's it. Like, the journey is probably more important than the destination. And I'm blessed to be an opportunity that I get to live the dream every day of, you know, being a martial artist. But being a martial artist that's in front of the black, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, giving an outlook to a lot of the younger athletes, giving them something else to look up to, and another pathway other than just the NBA or the NFL or the MLB or boxing. You know, we got MMA now, you know. Some of the best champions in the world, you know, got a whole lot of melanin in them. So I'm just trying to be a part of that path and you know, do my thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the reason why I hit you was.
Yeah,
tell us about you. Yeah, I was going to follow what you was going to ask.
How'd you get started?
So I got started about, I would say, probably like 11 years ago, really, honestly, was where it kind of started. Like, I was in the military playing college football. I was playing college football, and I needed more scholarship money. And one of my coaches was the ROTC coordinator, and he suggested to me that, hey, man, if you want to get more scholarship money. And at that time, I was married to my late wife at that moment. Well, I was actually in a relationship with her, but going to get married. And, you know, I needed more scholarship money because of my situation where I was headed to. And he had just provided the opportunity, like, hey, man, you should go join the Guard and join the Army. And during this time, when I went to basic training and everything like that, we had something called MACP. Now, I was born in Hawaii, raised all over the country, but the natural warrior spirit in me comes from, you know, my hometown of Hawaii, well, the state of Hawaii, but my hometown of Waimanalo, where, you know, in Hawaii, we fight. Like, there's no guns, there's no, maybe nowadays, but when I grew up, you had these fish, you know, it's like Friday, you had to run your one. And everybody loved BJ Penn and all that, so, like, in the back of my head, I've always wanted to compete or had, like, a fighting spirit. But I kind of was hesitant because I felt like I couldn't handle the cardio, or the workouts may have been too hard, and that was just me, you know, not allowing my potential to speak. But when I got into the military, we had something called MACP, is where they teach us, you know, how to, you know, physically hurt people, in a sense, you know, and anybody who's in the military would understand what MACP is. And I did well. I grew an affinity for combat lessons, or I don't know what to say, but I grew a hunger for it. And when I got out, man, I tried to go back to football, but it was just not there. My hunger for football to go to the NFL wasn't there, but my hunger for MMA or to be a martial artist and a fight in the UFC had just overcame me. So I started training in 2012 with Elite Training Center in Redondo Beach. Mm-hmm. That was my first gym. My first training partner, my first ever Muay Thai coach was Tiffany Van Soas. She's one of the best combat athletes ever of all time. She's a Glory World champion. She is an absolute animal, has some of the best footwork in the world. And a lot of people ask me, like, oh, my God, man, for a heavyweight, for a guy my size, how do you move the way you do? And it's like, man, she taught me just movements and things that, you know, most coaches don't really teach you in her style. And, you know, I got to learn mm-hmm. from her. Jiu-Jitsu, I was with Tony Pachinski, if I say his name, but he wasn't a ground guy, so I can't, you know. My homeboy Tommy Aaron, who's out in California still, he's a pro fighter right now. He was actually helping me do some stuff and teaching me little things here and there. I was really square in the game, though, but that was the first gym I trained at. And then I went over to different gyms here and there, but eventually I kind of went to Brandon Park with Coach Eddie Child, who's a UFC coach now. I think he coaches out in Arizona, with Henry Cejudo. So to see him and to know mm-hmm. that I trained on him, he's another striking, like another striking like guru, and he's worked with some of the best, John Jones, a lot of my other guys I've trained with, like Henry Corrales and Bellator, just an animal. And so I was training with all in MMA for a minute, and then eventually I had to move to North Carolina just to focus on MMA full time. And that's kind of where my real journey began, because, yes, I had trained at all these other places, but I didn't start to become the MMA fighter or really go past the boundaries of just training. And when I got here, and I would say that the school that really made the biggest impact on me was Royce Gracie. They're called Royce Gracie and Raleigh.
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the masters,
yes. Yes, Billy mm-hmm. Dowie, man, the great, the GOAT from North Carolina. Our gym before that was called Forge Fitness. And anybody who knows the community of MMA or anybody knows of anything about fighting in North Carolina, Forge Fitness and Billy Dowie is a household name. So I came up under him. Like, man, he really invested a lot into me, like more than any other fighter he's ever had to deal with. I was a little bit of a headache, you know, coming from the streets of, Compton, you know, it took a lot to not just make me a fighter. It took them to kind of introduce what it meant to be a man. And at this time I was married and my wife and, you know, and everything like that. And I was trying to so focus on fighting. But they were doing other things, and introducing me what it means to truly be a martial artist. And being a martial artist isn't just going out there and learning how to defend yourself or being able to hurt people in a physical way using these arts. It's also how you carry yourself as a human, you know, that it's really true. You know, like, I don't go looking for trouble, but I'm, you know, one of our biggest things is I'd rather be a warrior in a garden than be a gardener in a war.
Gardener,
you know?
Warrior, yeah.
I'd rather be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war, ready at all times. And that's kind of like the motto that he pushed to me. He put me on a Musashi, he had me reading books. But it wasn't just him. It was he was the overall guy, you know, who had a lot of influence on me. And then another guy by the name of John Country Allen, who, you know, we were very, very close. You couldn't take us two apart. He taught me everything about nutrition a lot of times. Like, he bought me my first scale, how to weigh food out, and taught me. He just was there for me as a brother. You know, I'll never take anything away from, you know, him and not give him his due. And then also Coach Ted Liner, who took my striking, like, prowess to a whole nother level. To my opinion, I feel like I'm the best striker in North Carolina, one of the best in the country. I feel like I'm one of the best in the world. I just need the opportunity to go prove it. Most guys who, I mean, I've never really had a guy who would stand with me except for one opponent of mine, which is, his name is Caleb Harris. But he's a striker. Everybody, you know, it was two, me and him were fighting, and it was just two giants that, known for knocking people out or, you know, making you dizzy. But other than that, I have no idea. I don't feel like when it comes to striking, there's many people better in a skill category. You know, I just haven't necessarily had an opportunity to prove it. But anybody who knows me and knows my ability knows I am a striker through and through. And I'm consistently working on my ground game. But, you know, smothering guys doesn't necessarily pay the bills. Knocking them out does. So thank you to those coaches. And I was with them for years. And then I believe in 2015, 16, I was training, and I was about to have my debut, but unfortunately my late wife, she passed away from cancer in 2018. But in 2016, she was diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and I just kind of stopped training, stopped fighting, and focused on just, you know, helping her and building the life that I could for her, which took a toll on me. And then in 2018, you know, unfortunately, she passed away, but she not necessarily had me, but I promised her that I would become the world champ, and I would give everything I have to being the world champ to me and able to make this place a better place, making the changes, taking care of the kids, like, you know what I'm saying, being an example, being the superhero that she thought I was. You know, she always called me Superman. I just never believed her, but, you know, at the end of the day, she thought of me in the best light, and I have to make sure that, in her honor, that I continue to do that. And I went off. 2018, I went on a stroll. I tried to take out anybody and everybody I could. I gave 110% effort, you know, and I ended up becoming the number one ranked heavyweight in North Carolina. I was undefeated through 2019 through 2020. I was one of the first amateurs signed under a management company. I was on a roll, man. I was ranked number, I think the highest I ranked in 2020 was number four in the country, and number one in North Carolina as a 265-pound heavyweight. So during that time, I ended up leaving the gym during COVID because obviously COVID had some changes, and I went to like a more, you know, we just had some differences in, you know, the future in terms of where I was going, and I ended up transferring gyms to like more of a pro style gym with more pro guys, and I mean all the best guys in North Carolina, even my boy Jamie Pickett, who's in the UFC now, Hannah Cypher, who's in the UFC, Alan Crowder, who's in the UFC, Damon Blackshear, who's in the UFC now. Like, I ended up getting to be around them, and man, once I did, I picked up so much. I just got even better. And so I had a fight in 2020, and it ended up being a no contest. I think it was a loss, but a no contest to Eyepoke. I ended up getting poked in the fourth round, and it was pretty bad. I didn't really have a good showing. I had COVID like the month before, and I was out of shape, you know, and then, you know, had to deal with what I had to deal with, some personal issues. My mom wasn't doing well with her health. But a year later, I ended up getting a rematch, which was this year in February, and I did my thing. Like, I got the revenge. Not necessarily revenge, because it was just a no. But it's crazy, because this fight ended up in a no contest due to the eye poke. But I feel like, a lot of people who watched the fight, was there like, yeah, you definitely won the fight. I put on the show. The highlights are out there, and everybody got to see. And so I had another title fight right after that, short notice. It was a close fight, five-round absolute war. Just another one of those situations where when I touch guys, all they want to do is take me down. And that's kind of what it was. It was me trying to just keep getting up. And I rocked him in the first or second round bad. But then after that, you know, he was able to work his game plan. Everyone just take me down and smother me. But I almost had a submission. You know, it was a good fight. We almost won fight of the night. But I didn't walk away necessarily with that W. But, you know, I get to rematch him in this year, which would be nice. And I'll be, you know, in the right shape. But I'm still ranked number one in North Carolina. I think I'm number 8 or 10 in the country right now. But, you know, I'm about to make my big, big pro debut soon. And North Carolina has a commission now, so we're able to have fights in North Carolina again. So that's kind of where I'm at. That's how I started and kind of where I'm at now. Just ready to just kill people this year, you know, 2023.
Man.
You know what's wild, though, man, is, and you know what I was going to say, too, you know what's wild, though, is that this where you know that you're really built for the game, if you could take your first hit, because, you know, even Tyson said it best, everybody has a plan to get punched in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when they get hit in the mouth,
mm-hmm.
they like, yo, let me just go back to my 9-to-5. I ain't built for this.
Yeah. I remember, I ain't going to lie to you, man. I remember my third fight. It was against a guy named Don Terrell, DeVario Evans, a former Duke wrestler, state champion, all this picked out. And, you know, he was having his debut. But he asked for the best guy. He said, I want the best guy in the world. The best guy you can get me. The best guy in the state. And the promoter was like, you know that, you want him? He's like, you know that guy's like number one, like experienced, like he's nothing to play with. And the dude was like, nah, man, I want to test myself, man. If I feel like I'm the best, then I'm the best, right? And, you know, for me, I kind of feel slighted. I felt slighted. Like, you going to come for me? You sure you want, and if anybody's looking for me, you're definitely going to find me. That turned me up. And in that fight, man, I hurt him bad. I didn't finish him. I wanted to, but I felt I wanted to get more cage work and some practice time in there because you don't get that much opportunity to fight and get the ring time. And I took advantage of it, man, and I hurt him bad. I was rocking him, socking him, and bobbing him, man. Every left, right turn, he was just getting cracked, man, and he kept trying to take me down. He was really strong. He was one of the strongest guys I ever dealt with who tried to grab me, but holding me down is very difficult. And it's not necessarily like an easy thing is to hold me down. And trying to hold me down for 3, 4, 5 rounds, you're going to get tired. And as soon as I feel like you can't do it no more, it's over for you, you know, and that's when I do my thing. And I think, and for that fight, it was awesome because that's the fight where I got, like, a lot of big recognition. A lot of the UFC guys is there, and after that fight, I got signed. You know, my manager, Lamont, was like, that's what I wanted to see. You hurt, like, you, I move fast. I got feet like a guy that's half my size. Like, he definitely was happy, and that made a big difference in my life in terms of just being able to have somebody support me. But I hurt that guy bad, and he just never fought again. After me, I think he had a concussion. He was throwing up, and I was like, I kind of felt bad after, but, you know, like, that's what you get for asking to fight me, and you ain't never fought before. And I have no issue with him, but, you know, and I have no issue with he's a cool dude, but, you know, like, that was one of the situations where careful what you ask for, you know?
And that's real. That's real, man, because a lot of times, because, man, you said so much, and we want to get back to some of the things you said earlier, but we want to stay current in this conversation as well. When you're looking at it from a perspective, okay, a lot of these people look at it from an end of what this fight game entails. Because like you said, we see the Paul brothers. We see Nate Robinson. We see a lot of people who are – now, the Paul brothers, to their credit, did actually train in terms of boxing before they got in the ring,
mm-hmm.
although there have been questions about their legitimacy. Because boxing, MMA is mixed martial arts, which is all forms of physical combat, from Greco-Roman mm-hmm. wrestling to judo to karate to kung fu,
yeah.
to all of that. It's a hybrid. It's an amalgam mm-hmm. of all styles. And in any style, you need to know exactly what you are doing in it. But the biggest thing is that, in no shade, you know, speaking ill of the dead, you know, with Kimbo Slice, you know, we saw the videos of what he did in terms of, you know, the backyard rumbles in Florida. But there was always the questions of, could Kimbo actually do that against real professionals? Just like with Brock Lesnar,
yeah.
you know, when he had that fight against dude and, you know, who's the last second replacement, and then that dude washed Brock, who was a trained MMA fighter, you know.
Yeah,
when you
that
see
came
a lot.
Man.
Yeah. And what do people have to understand about, number one, the discipline that it takes to do this, and keeping it real, the imminent danger getting in that ring? Because when you get, because when you in the ring, the gloves are off. It's go time. You got to
right.
handle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you, like, a lot of people think this is, like, a lot of guys, like, I've had a lot of guys in, you know, in my neighborhood and in the streets and young kids in the city, like, man, teach me how to fight, man, I want to go do this. And I have to explain to them, especially even my teammates now, like, the young guys that I got now that I got coming up in my gym, I got some animals coming. But I have to explain to them, like, look, it's not as easy as you think. It can be, but you have to be... You have to have dealt with light camera action in a professional. I played college football, so I had a little bit of a background, and I was a Golden Glove boxer as a kid. So I had a little bit of a background in just being put in the spotlight and able to perform a little bit. But still, I still had my, you know, kind of growing pains, right? But as an MMA fighter, man, it's different. MMA is different from boxing because, like, boxing is still a dangerous sport. To me, that's the only thing close. And I love boxing. I come from a boxing background.
Right.
But with MMA, you look at, like, the Kimbo Slice situation. Kimbo in the streets was scary. I would fight, anybody would never fight Kimbo except for guys who trained MMA. And that when Kimbo
right.
got to the UFC and he was on the Ultimate Fighter, yeah, we wasn't going to strike with him. But guess what? He doesn't have no grappling, no jiu-jitsu, no wrestling, no sambo. And those arts are extremely important. The guys I hate fighting the most are wrestlers because all they want to do is take you down. They don't care to stand and bang with you. They don't care to do none of that. They're going to single, double leg you, and power drive your ass to the ground for as long as they need to, as long as they get out of danger. And that is something as an MMA fighter you need to be prepared for, you know, and that's something I'm still working on to this day. I'll never stop because I know when guys, they know when they fight me, That's where they feel like they can have, that's my weak point. Because you're not going to stand and bang with me for sure. And now that I'm working on my jiu-jitsu is a lot better, you know, and jiu-jitsu is fire too. Like, all those arts, like, have its place. And that's why it's mixed martial arts. And the best guys in the world know how to mix it up and train it every day. The guys that don't mix it up and don't want to train every day end up losing or end up, like, being really good at one thing and then, like, sucking at another, and then they never make it as far as they could have because they never wanted to put in the discipline to train the other arts. Wrestling is hard. Like, and any guy who's been on here, if you're ever a wrestler, you know what that wrestling practice is like in high school or in college when you got to get your wrestling shoes on and get on that mat and do, you know, 45 to 100 shots, you know, sprawls and fireman carries. And that is, it's ruthless. That's one of the hardest sports in the world. Then you got jiu-jitsu, which is similar, but it's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu art where you wear a gi, or you can do no gi where you're learning how to choke people or arm bar. Like, most of the people I tell every day, if there's one art you want to learn that has no basis for, like, oh, if you're tall, skinny, this, that doesn't matter, kids, or a girl versus a guy, it's jiu-jitsu. My girlfriend can choke me out if I let her. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm an MMA fighter, but I guarantee to a guy my size, if I didn't have any training techniques, she would know just to go ahead and take his back, crawl up on his neck, put both legs around, both arms around his neck, and it's night-night, you know? And I have a lot of girls, younger women in my academy that are absolutely killers, but they don't throw a single punch, but they will take you down and submit you, break your arm, you know? So it's very, very important that you train all the aspects or train to the point where you're not in danger and you can develop a technique or a tactic to be able to get to where you're strongest at. Like guys like Adesanya or guys like, you know, but they all are higher level grapplers as well. They just don't want to do it. Get to the point where you don't have to do it. You get enough to where you can do what you want to do. And
right.
That's where like guys like Kimbo, but Kimbo didn't come up in the game like that. So I don't blame him because he's coming from the streets, you know.
Right.
MMA now is such a broad sport that now you can get it. But back then it was like the who's who knows what that is, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the basics. It's called discipline for a reason.
And when you talk about wrestling, too strong, you're talking about also in terms of what it means to really accomplish. Like we look at what Gulon Gardner did against Alexander Karolin, you know, and how he was able to be, you know, how he was able to beat him. And Karolin had been undefeated in the world international wrestling for 13 years. But like they say in terms of grappling and wrestling, as they say, there's always a distinct height advantage when you're standing up, but you're all on the same height when you hit the ground.
That's it.
That's how you move with it. When you think about the streets of Compton, of course, growing up, Rosecrans, Central, Compton Boulevard, you know, the CPT,
that's where I live,
Haru
on Compton
Street.
Boulevard and – yeah, I live all over there, yeah. I live, my grandma's house is on Culver Ave, right off of Compton Boulevard. That's where I stay.
Yeah, man. I mean, so look, throw it up for all, you know, throw it up for all our homies out in Compton. You know, Day One, Derek CPC, everybody.
Bam, there.
You know, yeah, man, you know,
all my family really from like, Compton, Long Beach, everywhere. Like, I got off Long Beach Boulevard.
That's
kind of the borders of Compton. You know, like, that's the city for me. Like, that's all my peoples. But I got, you know, I got family all over. I grew up in Detroit as well. So, the homies in Detroit, I've been to all the gutters. You know what I'm saying? You know, the 313, I used to live there. I went to Benjamin Nolan Middle School at Corvette Elementary. And, you know, they shut down now because it's just too gutter. But, you know, Compton is always going to be, you know, home for me just as much as Hawaii and any of those other places. I feel like the whole world is my home. But, you know, for me, that L.A. is a different story. You know, L.A. is a dangerous place. And, I mean, rest in peace to all the rappers that have lost their lives there recently, man. Like, it's nothing. To me, I'm not proud. Like, I'm not saying, oh, man, L.A. is scary. But, man, like, that's a lot of the times for me, you know, I'm from somewhere out there. Former gang member, I mean, you always gonna be where you from, but like for me, like that's just nothing to play with. Like that's all those people. That's all for me. And what gangbanger was then was like, that's all. Like if I didn't have nothing else, I'd still be a gang member. And I almost lost. Like I almost became, like, ended up saying forget it and was going to go, you know, just do my thug business and get, you know, do my thing. But luckily I found my wife. I got lucky, and there ain't too many times you can get lucky. And she told me it was either the hood or her. You know, luckily I made the decision to choose her, but a lot of the homies don't got that. A lot of the homies is still there, and, you know, for me, it's a dangerous place, man. Like, that's not a place you want to play with. You know, you start gangbanging at a lot of you start gangbanging at a young age, 8, 9 years old. My mom from the set.
Yeah.
My dad is an OG from the set. My adopted parent, my dad, but, you know, he from the set. OG Pineapple from Lutus Park, Carl. You know.
Lutus Park, yeah, man. Yo. I mean,
yeah, you know it.
And it's serious, man. I don't know about
my dad,
yeah, I mean, you got Neighborhood Pyru. Of course, you got Compton Crip.
Oh, yeah, you got the Neighborhood.
You know,
you got the West Side.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know.
Go ahead, go ahead.
I think it's around 400 gangs in Compton alone. Bloods, Crips,
yeah.
You know, the Borderlines, you can it's Bloods and Crips. It's mainly, though, I mean, I ain't going to say mainly. Long Beach is nothing but really Crips. I know a few Bloods,
yeah,
but it's very minimal.
Yeah.
It's the city of Crips.
Shout out to Pete Knight.
A lot of Bloods.
Yeah.
Facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
Compton got a lot of Crip Bloods, but it's the same thing pretty much, just in terms of gang culture. You know, we're out here. This is lovely. I love it. I don't really feel like, and it's nothing to, not to say that there isn't their hood parts out here, but for me, this is, man, we got trees and holidays out here. You can wear whatever you want. But you go to L.A., you go to Compton, you got to worry about what hats you got on, what colors you got on. They still on that out there. You know, somebody come up to you in the wrong neighborhood. It's they still in that time. So I remember I played football, I'd say 70% of the team was gang members. And, you know, whether you was this or that, you know what I'm saying, when it came to the field, it was like, all right, you was going to turn that down and, you know, we was going to play football. And some of the homies, your best homies is from other hoods. Now, you might not be friends with the enemy hood. You may just, you know, do your thing. But most of the times you go to the certain schools that you can go to that you can do your thing at. Like, you don't got to feel like the enemy hood is there. Like, I ain't never went to – there's schools I'm like, yeah, I'm not going there. It's the enemy. Enemy goes over there. But I wasn't this super gangsta out dude, though. I ain't going front like I ever was. I'm from the set, though. You know, and I got my issue, and I could have, you know. And I'm blessed to have a way out. But a lot of my homies that I still play football with was, you know, from hoods and still in the hood. Still living that hood life. You know, they try to do the football thing. And, you know, I'm blessed every day to be able to be an MMA fighter and get back to the community and do what I do. But, you know, I think that the struggles that I went through just made me better in terms of trying to do better with my life. And, you know, I never want to be in, I'm not going to glorify stupidity. You know, some of us have to live a certain lifestyle, and I get that. Not all of us are fortunate enough to be able to escape the hood. I love the hood. I never really leave the hood, to be honest with you. But at some point in your life, you have to accept the reality of how dangerous those things can be. But Compton is also a dope place. Compton got good food, culture there.
Can't forget the women.
You know, Compton College doing it. You know, it's a vibe. You just got to make sure that when you're going out there, you know, L.A. is like this. You go there and you whatever. If you're looking for something, you definitely going to find it. So if you're looking for that, you definitely going to find it. For sure. You know? But Compton got a lot of love, man. And look out for his people, though. You know? And that's one thing I love about Compton is, like, if you're from the city, you're from the CPT, you know, and you're trying to represent in a positive light, it's nothing but love for you. And that's one thing I appreciate. Like, I always represent Compton in a way. I always represent down in a certain way.
Man.
And I can't wait to go back and build, you know. So, hey, we can be MMA fighters. You know, I know a lot of my people from Compton is rooting for me. A lot of my people are like, man, you're the only one doing it. Like, you know what I'm saying? In this realm. We don't got a lot of MMA fighters. It'd be a few, but you know, each one teach one, and we all trying to get there, you know?
Man,
yeah, putting that bird
look,
in the sky, pretty much.
Yeah, let everybody
exactly.
see it, you know,
in
terms of letting it take flight. I mean, when you look at you know, we got Tragnu, you know, you got Kelly Clark, you know, like I said, Neighborhood Piru, you know, Compton.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know.
A lot of one of my best homies is from Nutty Block. You know what I'm saying? Nutty Block.
Okay, Nutty Block.
Compton Crip.
Okay.
Yeah, one of my best homies. I think he get out soon. My boy Juju, we grew up in college, man, and he showed me the most love. I mean, I was at his mama house, and the homies, you know what I'm saying, they showed me love, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of my homies is you know, I got my homies from Westside Powerroom, my daddy from Lewis Park. This hood's every corner of the hood. You know what I'm saying? You go to the swap meet, the Lima and Long Beach, it's basically the border of Compton, but it's so many hoods, it's too many for me to, you know, off the top of my head.
Man.
I mean,
can't forget,
you know,
Campanella.
All my cousins,
Campanella,
I'm Samoan. I'm Polynesian, right? I'm Polynesian and black. My daddy black. But I'm Samoan. And in L.A., Samoan is, we big, like, you know, big like the Rock, like whatever movie you want to call it. It's a lot of us. And, you know, we got our own hood, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, Park Village, Compton Crip, you got the Wax side and you got the Dark side. Dark side is the Samoans, pretty much, but the Wax side is, you know, whoever else, but it's still the same hood. But shout out to my homies from the Park Village, because, you know, it's really love in all aspects. You know, I got a lot of homies or cousins or relatives from hoods two streets over. That's could be Crip, could be blood. You know, Fruit Town, got a homie from Fruit Town. I live in my grandmother's house is in, like, they call it T-Flats. It's a Mexican gang, but it's also I'm having a dinner up and cooking, but YG hood.
Yeah, Treetop. Treetop. You got Treetop. You got Fruit Town.
Yeah, Treetop. I live right in the Treetop.
Yeah, Treetop. TTP. 400 block.
Yeah. Yeah. I live right there in the trees. You know what I'm saying? Across the street is Cabbage Patch, too. You got Cabbage Patch. It says everywhere over there.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I mean, seeing your Polynesian, you know, Samoan and all that for our, you know, for the, all of our brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Booyah
Tribe.
I mean, you got to look at...
Yeah,
you got to look it over at Carson. You know, Carson Samoan Warriors that are another extension of the Neighborhood Piru. Shout out to Booyah Tribe. You know, Red, rest in peace.
Yeah.
You know, OG Cobra.
Shout out to my cousin D-Boy. My cousin D-Boy rapping right now. He's from Westside Piru in Barson. He's killing the game right now. He turned up. So, shout out to him. That's part of, you know, Booyah Tribe. That's the relatives. So, you know, D-Boy doing his thing right now in L.A. and Varson and doing this with the Westsiders, you know, and they killing it, you know. But, yeah, Compton got Compton, Long Beach, you know, everybody connected. L.A., it's just like a big puzzle piece, but it's all connected. Difference is, I would say something like L.A. is, you got L.A. is kind of all stuck together. From like Watts to Long Beach to Compton to Inglewood to Hawthorne, that's all connected. It's not separated. Like if you do L.A., and then you got maybe an hour where you got like, what's the city called? Like the Inland Empire or something like that, Riverside, and they got their hoods out there. Or you go to,
I think he's from Inland Empire, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So, L.A. has a big, you know, influence on me, but I try to represent it in the right light. You know, I stay out the drama, and I try to, you know, because I can't sit here and nobody can sit there and play gangster and in the next moment play humanitarian, you know? Either you go do what you do and be what you be. So, you know, for me, I try to represent the city, the people, my family in the right light. And in the right way, and you know, try to be a person of light for the kids to come, that they have something that they can do with their life and their future, and, you know, try to feed their families and everything.
Absolutely. when you think about this also too, well, you're definitely a gentleman and a scholar and all this because you're quoting Musashi. And I caught that reference because that's Miyamoto Musashi, the legendary Japanese swordsman.
That's right.
That is actually Fuhamaru from, for all my video game nerds, Samurai Showdown. That is actually who his character is based off of. You know, you know, the traveling swordsman. When you read the books about him in terms of his ingenuity, his savvy, my favorite story has to be the one about where he had a duel with a swordsman, because this man is a mythic legend because he never lost a sword fight. He comes to on a boat,
right,
and the swordsman, he's his opponent, doesn't see the sword until they actually get to fighting, and Musashi actually has the oar that he paddles as his weapon, and he beats the guy.
Right.
Right.
Right. I mean, and for me, the favorite thing about Musashi for me was his mental, how he
right.
would influence. He was one of the favorite stories where he showed up late to a fight. The guy was expecting mm-hmm. him at like 2-3 o'clock, and he ain't show up till 6. And what that did to his opponent was mental, creating the anxiety, like, this guy's never going to show up. You got to fight, and you're supposed to fight at 2. You ready to go at 2, ready to turn up on him, and then, boom, he doesn't show up for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. And you sitting there with all the anxiety. Now your heart has been racing, and you questioning everything, and your mental, and finally you get there, your mind has not been at rest. You know, and that's, for me, one of the things that I picked up was, you know, your mental is the strongest thing you had. If you was 6'5", 280 pounds of pure meat, just strong muscle, no, just an absolute warrior, but you had no brain, what could you do? But if you were a quadriplegic or whatever, or even had something like MLS or something like that, like Stephen Hawking, your brain still allows you to do amazing things that can also change the world and make it a better place. So for me, that the value of what your brain is so much more important than what your body can do. Now, your body's important, and that's the thing that I still, you know, value. But for Musashi and the legends of combat sports or combat or fighting arts, period, is the mind is the strongest thing, man. Anything that you tell your mind, your body doesn't know. Like, your body is stronger than you allow it to be. And so it's just, you just need to have your mind strong enough to be able to tell your body what you need to do. And like you said, man, like, Musashi is just one of those guys that is just, it's legendary.
You look at the tradition that you've come into strong in terms of, you know, representing, you know, your Samoan and Black heritage, you know, which you are so unapologetically proud and should be with in terms of representing. When you look at some of the greatest fighters in MMA history, I mean, the list, John Jones, Anderson Silva, Tyron Woodley, Israel Adesanya, Inagamu, you know, Rashad Evans, you know, rest in peace, Anthony Johnson.
Rampage.
You know, Quentin Rampage Jackson. When you look at the trajectory of your career, of what you have aspired to, when you look at how, for a lot of times, as you said, because you want the next generation to understand that while football and basketball are good, and baseball as well, that there are other avenues that are an outlet to showcase an academia of achievement, to show an outlet of another expression of talent. For our children in general, how important is it for them to understand that there are no limits to what they can accomplish in terms of what they are striving to be, no matter what constraints, as artificial as they are, that society tries to put upon them?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's extremely important that we start to identify the dynamics of, you know, what we're capable of, you know, especially in our communities of Black and brown. We've been fed for years subconsciously, our media, TV, our culture is that, you know, we can only do certain things, like play sports or be in the street or these limiting factors, but I feel like as I've become more mature and more educated and follow people like Nip, man, Nipsey was one of my, like, is my favorite rapper of all time, not just for his ability to create music, but for what his music stood for and the things that he would do with it, you know. And I feel like the more individuals that we have in our community, the Serena Williams, you know, they're from Compton, you know, the Williams sisters, like when we start to identify more with that, we're more than just an athlete, that we have history, and Black history is just not a month. It's a lifetime. It's like that black people in itself have developed some of the most influential cultures, themes, ideas, fashions that we don't even get credit for because of so many factors that, you know, we could all use. But I want to be a part of the change that we consciously influence children and the future generations, that you can be whatever you want to be. It all depends on how much you want to put in the work and how much you are passionate about. Find the passion. You know, don't just stick to something that you have to do because of the bills. And I understand that paying your bills is important, but like Nipsey said, man, find something that you can do passionately and get paid for it. And for me, that's one of the things that I do is MMA, being a combat athlete. Is, man, I love to fight. It's a passion of mine, and I can get paid to do it. And it can do things for me that influence, I can have an influence and help in the world. You know, I also have a restaurant, a Hawaiian restaurant, and I also am a school teacher, new school teacher in that process. But I'm passionate about all these things. You don't have to be an athlete to be cool. Being a doctor is dope. We need more black doctors. We need more, and it isn't just black, but, you know, we need more. You know, one of the things one of my mentors said to me a long time ago was, if the minorities knew that they were the majority, they would really see who the minority was. You know, if we, as the minority folks, as blacks, you know, Spanish or whatever is what we consider a minority, if we were to come together, we would be more than the majority than what you would consider what is the majority today. And it's nothing racist or nothing like that, but it's just, I want to be an influence on my people that they can believe in themselves and do things that they think that they can't do or anybody else. And, you know, because like you guys understand, growing up in the hood can be hard. You know, yeah. Growing up in the hood can be a difficult factor because there's no positive, sometimes, of role models around, where there's no, you know, once you hit the first or second obstacle, it's like people start to give up. And I never want to have that. I've been knocked down 50 times. But every single, I'm going to get up 51 tomorrow. I'm going to get up 52 tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just what I want to kind of represent in terms to the future generations. And even people around that are still looking for that. You know, the symbol on my chest is a lightning bolt. But for me, it is, I believe I'm lightning in a bottle. I'm one of a kind. And I feel like I just spark to those people that spark a hope, you know, that whenever you see me fight or whenever you see me do what I do, that, you know, I give you hope, you know, to be able to continue to fight, you know, till there ain't no more fight left.
That's important.
So what was some of your...
I'm
back for me. Yeah, I was going to say, so, you know, in tying into your fighting, man, who are some of your, like, considered fighter heroes?
For sure, Anderson Silva, and I'm on Anderson Silva's team. I'm Team Killer Bees. Where my gym is at, Embrace Martial Arts, which is who I love. My coach, Joel Garcia, Thiago Silva, you know, Team Brazil, you know, I'm under pretty much Israel Gomez, Joel Garcia, and Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva is one of the GOATs. I still get starstruck no matter how many times I see him. He is, to me, one of my heroes for sure. If not my most, you know,
like most accomplished hero. Definitely BJ Penn, coming from the islands, you know, Hawaii being Hawaiian, Samoan, Polynesian period. BJ Penn was a huge factor. Like, you know, he gave us that, you know, never back down, I don't give a damn who, and just bang, you know, lick the blood off the gloves, rub them on your head, like, you know, just animal behavior. You know, BJ Penn is somebody I look at, is a huge, I have a BJ Penn, a gift for me from my brother Tony. He gave me a gift of BJ Penn gloves and hand wraps and a sign and like a frame, and I love it so much. It's one of my most prized possessions. Definitely Cain Velasquez, Daniel Cormier for sure, man. A lot of people don't know, Daniel Cormier lost a child while he was in the Olympics, I believe, before he got to the MMA, and, you know, he promised his family that he would go and become world champion, and he used that fuel to fight forward, and man, a guy like that, become heavyweight world champion, everything that he's been through, he's probably one of my favorites as well, man, and he's just a funny, good dude, and, you know, he represents the sport well, you know, even, I mean, John is athletically the GOAT, no matter what, but, and I'm never going to speak negatively necessarily about him because I don't know him personally. But on the cage, in the cage, he's the GOAT. And he's an absolute warrior, and I watch a lot of his films. Maybe, and Demetrius Johnson. Oh, my God. Talk about, I think, the greatest fighter of all time. Just off of pure skill. Don't matter about ticket sales, this and that. I mean, just crazy talented and ability to do, mix everything together. Demetrius Johnson, sure, Anderson Silva, Cain Velasquez, TJ Dillashaw, obviously Conor McGregor, for egotistical reasons, but, you know, what he's done for the game in terms of money and putting us on. You got to give love to Conor.
Yeah, Conor's here.
Izzy is one of my favorites. Yeah. But mainly those guys, because older guys I look up to, like, probably, hopefully, God willing, I get to the UFC this year, 2023 or 2024. I'll still be around. I'll fight John Jones tomorrow. I'll fight Ngannou tomorrow. I'll fight anybody in the UFC. But those guys still be around. So it's like Drake said, you work so hard to where you're, what's the line to your idol becomes your rival. So you, at some point, you know, if God is in God's plan for me, then, you know, I'll be fighting Ngannou or whoever the champ is. It don't matter. Curtis Blaydes, and who I met, was a great dude. Nothing personal against him, but if I had to fight him for the belt, it's go time. And nothing personal, you know. If people don't make it personal, then that's good for me because that's more money in my pocket, but. Yeah, man, those are the guys I look up to and really value what it means to be a martial artist.
Definitely. When you talk about the guys, who are some of the women in the game as well? Like, you got the girls like, I'm saying, Ronda Rousey. You talked about some of the women you trained with, and Ronda was known for that arm bar. She catch you in it, and you were done, you know, being a judo champ. I mean, of course, Holly Holm, of course. Yeah, you know, Chris Cyborg, all of them.
Cyborg is my number one. I have a wild look. Anybody who knows Cyborg, anybody who knows me, that's my girl. I have a MMA crush on Cyborg. I don't care what nobody say. That's my girl, and I love her. I think she's just the best thing in the world. Cyborg, I'm absolutely in love with. Amanda Nunes is a doll. The GOAT. That's the real lioness. That is a doll right there. She is an animal. Definitely Holly Holm. Thug Rose, man. She's an inspiration. I love her. My favorite fighter, girl fighter back in the day, was JJ, Joanna Gentry. I can't mess with her name. But anybody knows MMA, JJ was her striking. I used to watch her striking, her breathing patterns to learn how to breathe when I move. She had crazy footwork. I would say Amanda Nunes, Cyborg, Holly Holm, JJ and Thug Rose. Those but especially Thug Rose. When she DJed Thug Rose, Thug Rose, like, man, that's a emotional moment, man, to see what she's been through and to see her, you know. I love Thug Rose, man. But Cyborg is my baby for life.
I mean, and that's something. I mean, when we look at the phenomenon, of course, with MMA, Too Strong, we think about, because MMA's really been going back over 30 years. You know, shout out to Dana White, the
mm-hmm.
UFC, what he started with it. When you look at some of the older fighters like Ken Shamrock, Tank Abbott, and all those guys. Thinking about when you look at the history of it and where it's come to now, how do you feel about where, because we got to remember at one time, you know, King is definitely an aficionado of this as well, while my knowledge in it is, you know, casual, but still respectful of it. You mean, King, remember that
mm-hmm.
time that, you know, you had people trying to say it should be banned, you know, because people really thought that it was like, really, you know, like, because it was so new.
Oh, yeah, politicians out there were speaking on it. It was like, they were comparing it to cockfighting.
Yeah, human cockfight.
It was. I mean, back in the day, it was fool's gold. It was pure mayhem. You know, now it's regulated. There's rules. Back then, it was, bro, you could hit people in the nuts, and you could gouge people's eyes out. It was hard, but then they got together and in pride. Yes, one of them, it was crazy. People dying. I mean, it was crazy. No. I believe, but then that's how jiu-jitsu became so good, because of horse racing. Like, that
right.
was crazy to see a guy 180 pounds beating killers, Ken Shamrock, and, you know, all that. That was Tito Ortiz. Like, that was the game back then of, like, wow. And then you had Pride. Pride was, like, bigger than the UFC in Japan, and then the UFC kind of, you know, Dana went and bought the UFC, and they cleaned it up, and little by little, and then little by little, they go to here. Vegas was the place. And I think just like 5-6 years ago, New York just cleared it to have in New York, Madison Square Garden. And so the history of it is amazing to take. It's literally gladiator sports. This is it. We're the modern day gladiators, because we just don't use weapons. We don't try to kill each other. We try to kill each other in a weird way, but like, a lot of us have families. A lot of us are. I'm a family man. I have two beautiful black children that I love, plus a whole bunch of kids that I claim that ain't mine. But at the end of the day, I'm a family man. Like, I'm excited for Thanksgiving tomorrow. I'm cooking. You know, like, I'm excited for. I am a warrior in a garden right now. So for me, I'm at peace, and I get to do this as something I love. But, you know, a lot of people used to have the stigma that, oh, MMA fighters are killers. We just, some of the dangerous, most dangerous men in the world, smile the most. Anderson Silva is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Like, nicest guys you'll ever meet. Cain Velasquez, one of the nicest, coolest dudes, Daniel Cormier. You know, we have our opportunity to be murderers and killers and all that in the cage. It's legal. But that's the history of where it's grown, and I love where it's at now, and I can't wait to see where it's going to be in the future, especially with, you know, possibly it could be in the Olympics and things like that. Seeing younger kids go high school and end up becoming MMA fighters.
Ooh, that'll be – and look, they done put breakdancing in the Olympics, so I'm like, I mean, hey, why not MMA?
They have pancreation in Russia. It's basically MMA, but, yeah, I'm excited for it, man.
Looking at this time, from it, what are the, what, because there's Bellator, you know, all of that, because there's different leagues you have to get to before you actually get, it's just like in boxing, you know, you got to do your smaller promotions before you get to the big ones. And then, of course, they vet you through and through to make sure that you are able to defend yourself going into these. What is usually the process for fighters starting off in terms of how they make those progressions through the ranks to get to the big show?
So basically, like, how you would start is like how I started. Like, most people, you don't really just jump to the pros unless you're like a professional athlete, like CM Punk did. That's something very, very rare, and that's basically just money players. So basically, you start off as an amateur MMA fighter or boxer or whatever, and you start off with your amateur career. You start training, and then you do like small shows, like or you can do smokers, where it's like it doesn't go against your record, but you just go and you kind of have like a small thing, and then you go to have an MMA fight. Now, when you're starting to have like your debut, you start to develop, like you're coaching of the team, and it's really cool. It's like you get on your smaller shows, your regional shows in your area, and promotions put on. Some of these promotions have all amateur fights. Some of them have pro and amateur fights. Some of them just have pro fights. And they're all awesome to go to, whether how good or not, because like the last four fights I've had have all been championship amateur titles. Which, like, that we're just one of the best amateurs in the country. We're just waiting to go pro type of thing. And I'm getting ready to go to have my pro debut. But now that I have my pro debut, I'm back to 0-0. Everything that I've, this is it. And this is where records count. Usually you start fighting on the regional shows at a high level. Like, Next Level Fight Club is probably the best show I know of in North Carolina that has pro and amateur. And they take really good care of their fighters. They look out for them. I'm talking about have everything professionally done, from the weight, making a weight, to your blood, to your doctors, to the cage is big. Like, it's dope, man. Global Legion in South Carolina, Miami, they do really good. Fight Sport has probably the best AMI show other than Spartica. You get on these regional shows. Now, when you start to win, like, I know we're talking to my manager what the plan is, but when you turn pro, you usually get a manager. You know, mm-hmm. because they're going to be the ones that have the connections to, like, the UFC and Bellator or 1FC. Those are probably the big three, 1FC, Bellator, and the UFC. It's all a promotion. It's like playing basketball. You have the NBA, you have the G League, you have, you know, Drew League, all these different things, but the NBA is the one, right? The UFC is where you want to be. And, you know, luckily I have teammates that are in the UFC, and I have guys that are, like, under my management that, you know, Lamont Chapel, shout out to him. That's a bad dude right there. And you know, you just win. The more you win, the higher opportunities you get to. You fight better fighters, and you know, if my division, and I'd say the one below mine, which is the light heavyweight division, are the divisions that need guys the most. So because it's very thin in those divisions, there's not a lot of big dudes that can really fight at 265 pounds or 205, a lot of guys usually go to 185 pounds, 170, 155. Those divisions are stacked. So I love that I'm a, you know, 265 because, man, it's harder. But you usually just go that route and you fight on the regional shows and you get on the bigger, like statewide or countrywide shows. I hope to be able to fight on any show like Lights Out in LA or what's the other one? Titan SC. That one's good.
Dolphin Fighter.
On that one, but those are like countrywide shows. No, it's called The Ultimate Fighter. I mean, you can get on the Ultimate Fighter too, but see how the Ultimate Fighter works is it's the UFC. It's just like their mm-hmm. contest for whatever weight classes they have at the moment. So if they're going to do a heavyweight show, or if they're going to do a light heavyweight, 285, 205, 185, 170, are they going to do girls, or are they going to do only guys? That is like a show. It's like a reality TV show for UFC. So if you don't do that, the best way to get in is also the ultimate, the contender series, which is Dana White's contender series, and it happens during the summer, where if they're not going to sign you straight to the UFC, you go to the contender series to earn a contract. You know, couple of my buddies were on there. That's how my boy Jamie Pickett got on there. He went on there and knocked the guy out. I think in the second round, pieced him up, bad, finished him, and they were like, all right, you're in a contract. I'm thinking that if I don't sign with the UFC towards the end of this year, and God willing, you know, I'll go 4-5-0, whatever the case may be. Next year, 2024, I look to be in a contender series, you know, to get my way in. If not, I'll take a short notice fight, whatever I got to do. To get in there and put on a show, and you know, once I'm in there, it's a wrap, man. We're gonna take over. I'm getting that belt, and You know, I'm bringing it back to the city.
That's dope.
And you know what, though? This is what, though. I was going to say this, too, man. Like, we live in a time where in the fighting era, they look at, like, today, like, if you take an L, that your whole fighting career is over. Now, that's one of the Floyd Mayweather brought a lot to the fighting game in terms of money, commerce, flash, entertainment. But the only thing I didn't like what he brought to the table was that if you act as though if you took the L or lost, your career was done. Yeah, like if your career was done and that you can't really recover. But see, what I like about what you is like, you took your losses. Yeah.
Now, go ahead and finish. I'm listening to you.
Yeah, now, it depends. Now, if you got knocked out the ring like Martin Lawrence and Tommy the Hitman Hearns, yeah. You know, that's different. that's totally different. But
nah,
if you, you know, you could, yeah.
Nobody finishing me. Like, great question. Yeah, you know, like I said, like, you know, this game is rough on your mental, man. You got to be able to bounce back if you want any, you know, yes, the loss is mad. Now, you can't just go out there and be losing. Like, I don't lose like that. The only time I've ever lost is when, like, when I did something stupid, like I shouldn't have fought. I was being egotistical, taking a short notice fight on 2 weeks, but not fight ready in shape. I've only had two. And those two, I know I can beat. I got my revenge back, and I know I can beat. I'm gonna fight the other guy again, in the pro levels, and I can't wait to be in shape, have what I need to have to be at a fighter. I'm better than both of them. I feel just as overall as an MMA fighter. One of them is better, maybe in for sure. Kavon Pierce is better than me in strength conditioning at the moment, but I don't feel like skill wise. And this isn't a knock on him. He's an amazing athlete. Good fight. We have different types of game plans, but I feel like that I'm better than him. For sure I'm better than him. And I don't feel like if he was to say he was better than me, I wouldn't get mad. But like, we all get to test it out. I don't have no hard feelings to say I'm the best because I feel like I'm the best. I'm going to smoke with everybody. So 2023, I don't got no friends. We get, like, and it's not like I'm not no friends, but like I'll fight everybody and then because I feel like I'm the best. I want to prove that I'm the best. I want the same boxing energy. I'm on that Javante Davis type energy, you know, right? Like, I'm with all that. So for me, it's like a loss only hurts you if you allow it to and if you don't learn. It's, in our game, we like to say not the word loss, but a lesson. You either win or you learn. And in both of the losses that I have, I've learned how not to approach a fight, to think that I'm unstoppable even on my worst day, you know? Luckily, I said I really got one loss because the other loss was from my eye poke, so that really wasn't no loss. But I really have only one loss, and the only reason why I lost that fight, because I went into out of shape, I took it on short notice, I was injured, but I should have pulled out because I hurt myself that week, but I'm not, like, if I can swing and still have a shot at winning, I will. And that was the stupidity on my part, but it ain't like I got necessarily thrashed. It was a five-round war, back and forth. Like, he touched me, and I didn't move. I touched him, and he did the groove. That was the difference. Now, he'll pick my ass up and slam me. You know, he was strong as hell. But, you know, if I was in shape, I would have been able to defend the takedown. The first round, I won the first round. You know, he couldn't take me down, and that's where I took the most lesson was, you know, and this is why amateur careers matter, because this is where you learn your lesson, that you don't take over into the pros. But now that I'm fighting for money and fighting for the UFC, I'm not going to do stupid stuff like be out of shape or not be in the best shape of my life or fighting when I'm injured or, like, not having a coach or, like, those bad choices. And so you eventually either win or you learn. The only thing about what made Floyd Mayweather was, I don't trip necessarily, because that's what made him great in terms of the money buying. And you wanted to either see him win or you wanted to see him lose. Either way, he was paying to watch to either see him win
right.
or you see him lose. Right. Hello. Canelo was beating everybody. The only person that, and Mayweather was smart. He took out Canelo before Canelo was ready. You know, and
yeah.
I respect it. Canelo was doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Caleb Plant is an animal. I feel like, you know, Canelo is just a dog. I mean, he's been fighting since he was a kid. Like, it's levels to this game, and everybody has a chance. You know, if you look at Anthony Joshua, you know, taking his first loss to Ruiz, that messed him up. You can see his mental, his ego was like, he was supposed to be 6'6", chiseled, 4% body fat, great British pride, unstoppable. And then you let a guy from California, out of shape, like, come and finish you, put you on Front Street, you know? Deontay Wilder, you know, I respect his comeback, and I want to see him succeed. I know, like, you know, Tyson Fury, see, fighting don't have nothing to do with how you look a lot of times. And it looks good when you have the abs and all that, but this fight, your ass can fight. It don't matter how good you look, because there's a lot of guys out here with abs and bumps. You know, cannot fight at all. And there's guys out here with a six-pack beer belly that will rock your socks. You know? I'm more on the chunkier side, but that's just because of my genetics. But, you know, I don't got no abs, but I'm telling you, I'm faster than guys half my size. I got footwork. I hit like a ton. I got a Mack truck in my right hand, and I got a Hellcat in my left hand. You know, you just got to pick your poison with me. But when you look at me, I mean, I'm not like beast or nothing, but I don't have abs, you know, but I'm a heavyweight. It don't matter. You know, but when you look at a guy like Francis Ngannou, 6'5", just 265 pounds, 8% body fat, just killing dudes, that's what you want as a brand. Can't knock it. But everybody has to take their loss the right way, and Ngannou did. He lost to Stipe, came back better, and that's where it matters. Take your loss, take your L, learn your lesson. Come out here and get better and put the work in. And that's all that matters. Get back up. Like Rocky said, you get up, eight, you get up nine.
Man, to see, like you said, because it's not always, like you said, about the physical, because there's always a certain aesthetic that we know the game has in it, because it's like anything. You know, when we even compare it to professional wrestling, you know, there's always going to be the larger-than-life figures that they feel that they can sell. But the reality is it's about the skill rather than the look, because the look don't win fights. Your ability does.
Right.
To see individuals like yourself, shout-out to my man Antoine Britt. You know, went to high school with him, Indian River High School. You know, he's got his own company, Britt Fit. He was a former MMA fighter himself. You know, so...
Mm-hmm.
To watch you guys do what you all do is inspirational. It's incredible because you sacrifice a lot in terms of going into it, understanding what this takes. When you pretty much started on your journey with it, are you pretty much, was it something you did an amalgam of everything, or are you certified in belts, in terms of black belts or whatever belts you have, in all of your disciplines in terms of what you have worked in?
The accolades and the belts and all those things, they do matter in a sense. But it's necessarily what you do with what you have, right? I can give
right.
you
okay.
all the weapons in the world, but if you don't know how to use them, it's almost pointless. You feel me? I don't care to be a black belt in jiu-jitsu at the moment. Eventually, I will get it. But right now, I just want to focus on being the best athlete or grappler I can be. And we all have different styles of grappling. Some of us are aggressive. Some of us are smooth tacticians. I am a white belt. I'm probably the white belt, the longest of the white belt, a long time. But when you guys roll with me or guys who know me, that guy, I'm not a white belt. Like, my coach has always wanted to give me my belt. He told me, but I don't do gi. And when you're in a gi, that's how you obtain your belt. When you're doing no gi and things like that, that's more so without a belt or without a gi. And it's just all repetition of what you focus on. I would say I'm a black belt in striking. I have my, quote, I would say in Muay Thai, there's no belts, but for our school, we have, like, or in general, Muay Thai colors. I have the color dark blue is right before black, and that's in Muay Thai. So, like, for sure that. I, just an athlete, play college football. I can do things that other guys my size cannot. That's probably one of my biggest benefits, or I guess accolades I could say, because in MMA there's not much of a transition between belts and stuff and accolades. I never wrestled in high school. I played football, basketball, volleyball, baseball. In college I played football. In the terms of sports MMA, I am still a white belt in jiu-jitsu, but I'll probably get my blue belt soon. If I commit to doing the GD, I don't have any idea. I could probably get in 2 or 3 months if I want. Like, I could get my blue belt tomorrow. Who knows? It's up to my coach. But that's hard. Getting your blue belt is not easy in jiu-jitsu. It takes time. It's definitely a consistent drive every day. When it comes to striking, I've trained karate. I've trained Muay Thai, Taekwondo. Different types of striking to develop certain aspects to my hips, kicks. Like, there's just, I'm in love with striking. I'm a Golden Gloves boxer. I box when I was a kid. I'm a definitely damn good boxer. I could box, like, if I just wanted to box, I could box. But I like the aspects of all of it together. It's sweeter when you can head kick a guy or, you know, Superman punch or elbow. Like, oh, man, knee. I love knee. Anybody knows knee? I have my knees are like tree trunk, like, just, you don't want to get kneed by me. But yeah, it's different, man. Like, fighting is such a crazy thing because you can have all the accolades but don't know how to use them, and because you have to put it together, you have to be able to. It's like cooking. You get in the kitchen and somebody can have brown sugar, cinnamon, butter, and sweet potato, but the quantities or how they cook it may not make it as good as grandma's or whoever the best is in the world, but they have the same ingredients. They try to make it the best, and, you know. So I think fighting is the same way. You can have these things, but you got to have a brain that can mix them all together, knowing the timing, the distance, the length, the how not to use your cardio, when to use your cardio, when the knockout punch is, and when to throw, and how your opponent ring gentlemanship. Where your opponent is hurt and when to hit that to get them to think this, and it's a, man, you really got to be a tactician too.
Yes, and that's important, because it's like anything you learn in life, you know, the proper training. I think Miles Davis once said it best: learn the instrument, master the instrument, then forget all that shit and just play. You know, learn what you need to learn, but move on your instincts in terms of what your muscle memory from what you have learned has trained you for, and you just go ahead. Because sometimes it's not necessarily going to be, because when you're really in it, you have to rely on the instinctive knowledge of the base fundamentals that have been learned. And that's where you are best at it. If you think too much in terms of calculation, it's not going to work, because calculation you're trying to make in an unpredictable and spontaneous element. It's about seeing it opening and then moving on. Don't be reckless, but don't think too hard about it either. Just do it.
Yeah, you got to see, one of the things we have in fighting is something we call the flow, and the flow is like this God-level ability to, and see, I have ADHD, which it helps. I can get into flow extremely fast, and once I'm into flow mode, like, if you hesitate, yes, like, those things will get you hurt. But when it comes to fighting, there's something we call flow. It's like God-level ability to process in your brain. And when you're in flow, it's like everything is hitting. Like, you don't even try it. Boom. It's bing. Oh, it's Muhammad Ali doing the shuffle and hitting you with the left hook. Ah. It's when you can dance. You can boogie. Like, I tell my teammates and I tell my students, I tell them this all the time. Gangsters don't dance. We boogie. And when we're in this cage, right. we don't necessarily need to dance. We need to boogie. You can dance. I dance all the time, but it's like Adesanya, he would clarify the dancing. Because, you know, it's just the ability to make your body be free of its control and let it just do what it does. You know, just, I've done things with my body in fights, and I'm like, how did I think of that? Like, how did I hit a guy with an 8-piece combo, and it was fluid? It was one of my highlights, you see, I'm on the cage, and I hit him, knee him in the leg, uppercut him, then throw a hook, push him off me, hit him with a 2-piece, then leg, and then I push him, he come up the cage, I throw a knee. I did not think that at all. It just happened because I was in
right.
flow. And when you're in flow, it's just, it's some next level Dragon Ball Z, Super Saiyan.
Super
like,
Saiyan.
It's when you 8 Mile, B-Rabbit, fuck 3-Rail, 313, he just, like, that's, it's.
You hit him with the Goku get him.
It's crazy to feel it. Come on now, like, what? It's when grandma in the kitchen and she not even trying. She put her foot in it.
But that's how you work with it in terms of learning it and then getting it. Ultimately, what other interests do you have? Do you think down the line you may want to do movies? You think you may want to write a book about your experience? I mean, what else?
Yeah. Hell yeah. So I got 3 books I'm working on right now. I want to be the next Rock. You know, my main job is only be the next Rock. I want to do movies. I want to be the biggest. I just want to be what God placed me on this earth to be. And I feel like being a visionary in the sense of what God has placed in my mind is to just be lightning in a bottle, you know, do movies. I got 2 books I'm working on, like not necessarily self-help books, but like books to just give you a perspective of dealing with certain things like
hope.
Pain from losing someone you love. Like I said, I lost my wife. Yep, hope and you know, turning your travesty into a triumph and turning your pain into purpose, you know. And I'm working on a kid's, like, comic book-ish, book-slash-comic-book kind of thing. And that, I love superheroes. I love comics. I'm a big Comic-Con person. That used to be my getaway in the hood when I was a kid. I love food. Anybody who knows me knows about me. I have a restaurant called Aloha Barbecue. I throw pop-up shop plate sales throughout the month when I'm not busy. And I have a cult following with that. You can find us on Instagram at Aloha Barbecue for the moment, and I have it on my Facebook. I post all the time. But I love to cook, man. Like, cook, and it's art to me. I'm an art person in terms of, to me, fighting is an art. Cooking is an art. I don't draw. I couldn't draw to save my life. I'm a stick figure kind of guy. But things that music, dancing, cooking, fighting, these are all art forms that I truly enjoy. So doing cooking, I'm looking to open up a restaurant once I kind of get settled in the UFC, have enough money to just, you know, invest. I'm all teacher. At the moment, I teach at Wilburn Elementary. I'm the second year. I'm working to get my license here full time. But I'm a school teacher, and I enjoy it, man. And I've only been doing it for about 10 months now, but it's made a huge impact on my life. The kids give me a different perspective, and they brought back the love that I lost in a lot of things. And just thinking about them gets me, like, just my heart gets to beat just because they look at me like, it's weird because, you know, nowadays, you know, back in the day when you were at school, you couldn't go Google your teacher or you couldn't find them on Instagram or YouTube and social media. You know, now these kids, they meet you and, oh, they Google you. And now all my kids and my faculty and staff, they know I'm an MMA fighter. They support me. He got the merch. They find me on YouTube. And these kids, man, they it's like they're genuinely interested in the best side of you. You know what I'm saying? And it's such a blessing, man. And these kids, I have a new reason to fight, man, and it's amazing. Like the love that God put in my heart and my life through these children. So I look, even if I get to the UFC, I'm probably still going to be a teacher just because I love it. It's a passion project. And it's also another way to see kids see that, hey, you can be whatever you want to be as long as you put in the work and time and the effort and never give up. So, yeah. And that, you know, I have my own foundation. It's called the Too Strong Together Foundation, the TSC Foundation. We look to give back to women with cancer, kids with cancer, and we like to do events like give back to the community, school supplies, stuff like that. I'm looking to do big stuff in 2023. COVID kind of slows some things down, but looking to get the foundation up, back and running big time to be able to give back to my community. Yeah, man, I'm just a person of the people. If whatever I can do to allow God to use me in whatever way, fashion, or form, that's kind of what I want to do, man, in a positive light. Because I came a long way, man. I was a very troubled kid, made a lot of bad decisions, but you know, through the people that are in my life and the people that are around me, they've been able to allow me to see past my mistakes. And, you know, like me and my boy, you know, the King Eric over here, man, knowing him for a minute, and dude, I appreciate him a lot just because we've always had just good energy and good vibes, man, through just being around each other for so long. Just meeting people like him in the community and having this opportunity just off of, you know, showing love is a beautiful thing. So that's something I want to continue just being around. Impacting the world and impacting my community, man.
Definitely.
That's what it is,
man. That's what we do, man. It's like bringing people's journeys into the forefront to our audience. So I know you for a minute. I know you had a story to tell, and plus you're putting on for the city and you're putting on for Compton as well. So you merging both of those worlds together. So I was like, man, it's only right. And plus, you know, you are first MMA fighter,
man.
So why not?
Hey, that's facts. That's facts. And I'm telling you, man, like, y'all, like, I'm telling you now, like, I'm going to shut the city down with this game. Because, you know, we don't have any NFL players here necessarily. We don't have any NBA players. That's in Charlotte. So I'm competing with the hockey players, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know some of the rappers here, but I'm in tune with some of the rappers. My boy Gianni, shout out to him. My boy Gianni, man,
yeah. Killing
the game. Lyrical, bro, lyrical to the T. That's my brother. My aunt, she owns 5 barbershops in the area and a cosmetology school. Wanda Short, she owns Cheryl's University, and she owns Billionaire's Barbershops in Triangle Mall, Cary, Midtown, another one in the Raleigh area. I don't know the plaza it is, but it's near the Wake Med Hospital. But she's a big influence in the community, and I mean, just to turn up in the city this year, like, I got homies that's running the club, like running the clubs and food spots. Like, we gonna turn up because we got too much talent in Raleigh not to. We got too much dope that's going on. We got too much love. And I'm looking to be on billboards and shutting down, you know, the convention center. I'm hoping my manager can, you know, and the promotion Next Level Fight Club can do a big show either this summer in Raleigh downtown somewhere. And I'm telling you, I'm going to definitely get y'all some tickets. Y'all come to that. It's going to be an experience. You'll want to go to every MMA fight after that. Like, it's crazy, man. I mean, it's you know, when you was in school and you see them fighting in the bathroom or fighting in the cafeteria, it was lit. Now imagine you can go out, drink, dress up, take a woman with you, your lady, your man. You know, if you want to take the kids, you can. You know, you get you some VIP tickets, some ringside tickets, and you enjoy yourself, and you see 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 fights of some of the best athletes in the world, in the country, putting on a show. And I mean, I just remember, I'm addicted to the oohs and the ahs. You know, when I'm rocking somebody, I'm like, and
right.
The crowd is going, ooh. I remember my first fight, I had to finish TKO second round. And I couldn't really hear because I was in the moment, but I heard the crowd after I won finished them, and they were screaming, oh, my gosh. It's such a crazy feeling when you hear people screaming when you're about to knock somebody out. It's intoxicating, you know?
Yeah, adrenaline rush.
And I can't wait to bring that back to Raleigh, man.
Hey, you know what, though? I was going to ask this, man, and maybe this is just me. Because, you know what really sets the tone for what you would consider to be a good fight is what is considered to be chosen as ring music. Because, you remember how Tyson had Welcome to the Terror Dome when he walked to the ring.
Uh-huh.
And he had people just tripling in their boots. Now I just feel like, the fighters today just got a lot of this goofy shit going on, man. They be picking so many goofy songs. And I'm like, how can you get in the four-pack and God body over you to beat somebody up? And they over there playing on.
It's different, bro. I'm victim to that, too, just because it's branding. You want people to be able to vibe, and, we're in a new age. You know, it's not as rugged, thuggish as it was back in the day with them. You like, now you have guys that, like, I'm a school teacher. Like, I'm a school teacher in the day, and I'm a ass whooper at night. You know, so you try to build a brand where you can make the most money and the most influence. I kind of let my fans choose my walkout music sometimes. I'll have a certain set of music, and I'll put, like, a vote on my Instagram and let people choose. Sometimes it's, like, wild stuff, but it's also trying to mess with the mental of your opponent. Like, one of my favorite fighters, Ty Tuivasa, come out to the Titanic theme music. He has come out to Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. But he loves a fight. Like, he loves a good, like, crack. A good crack against a jaw. Like, I'm kind of like that in a sense, but I'm more in tune with the crowd, building up the show. Like, my walkout, I have a specific walkout every fight because that's how you know I'm coming. Like, I walk out to my cultural music. It's called Hawaii 78. It's one of our singers singing a traditional cultural song that talks about our island and who we are as a people. And when you hear that, the horn, and you hear that come out, and then boom, I throw a mix in there, and I throw a song in there. Like, people love that, and they expect that every time I fight, and it's become a brand thing, and that's kind of basically what that is. I wish I could come out to, Fight the Power or something like that. It's lit, but, it's just, when I fight in Raleigh, I already know the song I'm coming out to. Like, in the UFC, when I headline the UFC, UFC Raleigh, God willing, man, I'm coming out to P.D. Pablo's Raise Up, and I get emotional. I cry when I hear that. Like, I envision in my mind because I know, like, what that means to people, Hopefully if I fight this year in Raleigh and I come out and fight and coming out to Notorious, like Conor used to come out with that Irish joint and then come out with the Biggie. I feel like I'm going to do that with my cultural music and then come out with the Biggie joint just because people are going to attract to that.
I was just saying, because the wrong ring music, man. I remember when Pacquiao, he came out to, I think, Katy Perry. He got rocked out by Marquez. So I was like, man, you do stuck to the culture.
Sometimes that happens, bro.
Man, look,
it's all about the mental.
Look, Too Strong, I'll send you some more in the DM, but I'll give you a playlist in terms of different songs to go through, like Morbid Angel, The Lion's Den, Overkill's Horoscope, some real heavy metal shit. It's like, matter of fact, Nile, Ramsey's Bringer of War, In Tune, Wolverine Blues.
Put me on, man.
Look,
I love music.
Get you a list.
Forward, man. Oh yeah,
Yeah, man, but it's
get you a list.
Man, but that's about intimidation once you set it off in the ring. You know, you got to let them know, like, look, we come for business, and I'm here to close the deal on that business.
That's facts. Sometimes I can look goofy sometimes it's this thing of, like, who comes out first. If you're coming out first, like, if you're the home team, you come out second. Because, like, imagine you walking in the green and, like, you see your opponent. He's waiting there for you. So he's sitting in that cage dealing with all that anxiety, listening to your music, having you come out first. Like, you came out first. I remember I had to fight one of my opponents, and I had to come out first because I was in his hometown. So I'm sitting there, my music done, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm just standing here. Like, it's nerve-wracking. And then he's coming out the NBA Young Boy, the whole crowd going crazy. And I'm sitting there like, oh, my God. All right, can we hear him fight, bro? Like, come on. Luckily, I pieced him up bad in that fight. But it was because you pissed me off by making me wait. You know, but, like, that be the thing. It can also be used against you, you know, whoever goes first or second. But, you know, that's just the game, though, you know. That's the fun parts about it.
Yeah. It's all about being able to mentally get in your opponent's head in terms of it. When you look at the history of certain fighters in the ring, what were some of the most surprising victories that you saw in terms of fights that you've seen with certain MMA, with certain fighters in UFC, or just any match in general where the odds were stacked against this individual and they still came out on top?
Certain fights where the style is like a kryptonite. Like, for strikers, wrestlers are annoying because, like, you want to stand and fight, but they just want to take you down. And for you to engage and get into the strike, they can bait you into a striking battle and then take you down. And it's like, oh, my God, it's annoying. But I've seen Anderson Silva finish Chael Sonnen with a triangle in the fifth round with, like, a minute to go after he was losing a whole round. I saw Jorge Masvidal flying knee against Benny Boy, wrestler. TJ Dillashaw, man, he won the championship round. He beat a guy that didn't lose for 10 years straight, and everybody doubted him. But, you know, it's just one of these things, like, you know, fights where it's just about you, like, self-belief. It's about some people being too cocky sometimes. It's about, you know, being able to manifest your effort and hard work and put it on display. Make your movie come to realization, you know? A lot of fights I'm not necessarily surprised because, like, study fighting and I understand it and, like, nothing necessarily surprises me. But it'd be some fights where, like, certain things that they do surprises me. Like, recently, the Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler fight, it was absolute war. It was Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler. And in the last round, Dustin Poirier submits him after Michael Chandler slams him on his head from a takedown.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing necessarily surprises me. It just be like, what surprises me more so be the way in which it's done sometimes. Just sometimes, though. But it's really a lot of, it's a game of chess, man. You know? That's basically what it is.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and man, look, we got to probably wrap it up shortly because we run a little bit on time, man. But definitely, man, feel free to name drop everything.
I gotta go finish cooking too, man.
Yeah, feel free to name drop where people can follow you on, where, you know, YouTube channel, social media handles, all that stuff.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. It's an absolute blessing to be on the show. I love what you guys are doing. It's dope. It's just such a blessing to be here. You guys can, anybody who's listening, anybody who hears this, you guys can find me at Too Strong Taylor, that's T-double-O, Strong Taylor, at Instagram. I have a Facebook with that. YouTube is Too Strong Taylor. My TikTok is coming. Content is coming on TikTok. You can find me at Too Strong Taylor on there as well. Twitter, you can find me Too Strong D. But basically everything is TST or Too Strong Taylor, man. Like, it makes it easier for TST just because I have my name T, the lightning bolt, which is kind of like an S, and then the T, so it's TST for Too Strong Taylor. So be on the lookout for T. I got merch. My website will be coming back up in December. We're just doing a revamp right now because I'm transitioning to becoming a full-time pro. But that will be TSTNation.com. And you can find me there. And I'll have info about who I am, what I do, and any upcoming events I have, and sponsorship info, all those kind of things. But, yeah, man, shout out to Off the Cuff, man. I really appreciate y'all. Y'all have been nothing but a blessing, man. I can't wait to see what you guys do in the future, man. It's definitely dope that's going around here.
Dude, we're honored. We're privileged. Thank you so much for giving us, you know, so much insight, so much truth, so much, I mean, upliftment, so much inspiration. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep being an inspiration and blessing to others. Keep fighting strong as the heart beats of your heritage. Never give up, never give in, and always realize you fight to win at any cost. You know, so just keep doing it, man. We support you all the way, and you're welcome back anytime.
I appreciate you, brother. I look forward to being here on the show more, man. And stay tuned for 2023. I got y'all some tickets, man. I can't wait to see y'all come out to my place and put in some work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Most definitely, man. So, yeah, we're about to be out, man. Catch us again Friday night. Same time, same channel. Y'all know what it is, man. Big shout out to Too Strong Taylor. Be sure to check him out. Kicking ass and taking names.
Yep.
Hey, say that one more time for those in the back who didn't hear it.
Say kicking ass and taking names like a 1998 Stone Cold Steve Austin. You heard?
Hey, what? I appreciate y'all, man. Y'all have a good night, man. I'm out.
You too, man. All right. Say, thank you. And King, take us out of here.